Kennedy and others. Much of the overcrowding can be solved simply by addressing the block-by-block narrowing of sidewalk space by street furniture. The city could also designate some parking lanes for vending, as it did between 33rd and 34th streets. These moves alone can make walking down congested sidewalks less like an Olympic event. One has to wonder whether state legislation is even necessary. By using these measures and by closing certain streets to peddlers during peak times of the holiday season, the city could effectively deal with the situation. And then it goes on again with more specifics about New York City. And, of course, Robert Letterman has gone into that in some detail, so I'm going to skip it. You can get it online, however, if you're interested in reading about it. www.newyorkpress.com, I believe, has Letterman's article, and I believe it also has this article. And again, you can email Robert Letterman at robert.letterman, L-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at worldnet.att.net. And miss any of these numbers or email addresses, leave me a message on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, and I will get them to you later. And of course, call on the air if you want to talk about any of this, 427-3772. Santa Cruz City Council will be having a special session day after tomorrow. That's not, of course, the regular council session where numerous protests are being planned, and we're going to be talking about that in a moment. But the special closed session is happening at 4 o'clock on January 6th. That's day after tomorrow. Mayor Kennedy will open the special City Council Redevelopment Agency closed litigation session and talk about labor negotiations with the police, supervisors, and the managers, firefighters, and so forth. You won't be able to hear most of it, but if you want to speak out, for example, about the giveaway of the budget to the police department, you can speak briefly at 4 o'clock before they close down the session. That's at least the Brown Act. That's the law, if they, of course, follow it. However, next Tuesday, the Tuesday after this one, on the 13th of January, there's going to be perhaps a significantly different situation. Some may know that the so-called One Dance Summit is coming to town, and the One Dance Summit is a three-day kind of conglomerate of folks concerned with different, I guess, both civil liberties and foreign policy and domestic policy issues. I'm actually scanning here to find the agenda for the summit. It's going to be running for 3 days. It'll have people like Michael Parenti at it. I don't seem to have it with me here at the moment. But the organizer of the summit, Richard Oxman, has been particularly concerned with local issues as well and interested in making sure that activists aren't busy making national pronouncements about the Patriot Act while allowing, for example, the city to shut down civil rights and civil liberties locally. One of the concerns I had with the Bill of Rights Defense Committee that locally operated unsuccessfully to try to get the city council to stringently require non-cooperation with the Ashcroft Patriot Act and Patriot Act II and all the rest of the hysterical pseudo anti-terrorist measures that are actually simply an expansion of oppressive government power and have nothing to do with protecting anybody's health and safety, but simply actually make us all more unsafe for a variety of reasons, not to mention the least of which is the loss of our basic civil rights, which make the whole thing to the point, and our civil liberties. Local organizations are often not concerned with criticizing the new mayor, Scott Kennedy, his vice mayor, Rotkin, the previous mayor, Riley, Green Party hero, Tim Fitzmaurice, who is about as green as the dust when it comes to basic civil rights for homeless people and the state Green Party platform of the rights of the poor. But local progressives, as they call themselves, or inside players, don't wish to cause commotion. And so we saw this absurd spectacle, for example, of Art and Revolution and Susan Zeman's group Peace Friday agreeing to the Grand Marshal's New Year's Eve restrictions on marching in the parade here on New Year's Eve in Santa Cruz, agreeing not to hold up any signs and not to give out any leaflets. That's not New York City under the BIDs, under the Business Improvement District. That's Santa Cruz under our own downtown association. Yes, it's happening in Santa Cruz. It happened in Santa Cruz, and major progressives on this, I'm sorry to say, sold out. they agreed to that absurd condition. They wanted to do so they could get a spot in the parade, and ironically, they were almost denied that spot. They had to fight for it even then. They were told that they were going to be put on the way back because they were political, even denied a place entirely. I think they got to the next to the last spot. What were they doing? Some Wizard of Oz thing. And who got the big billing? Some people with large corporate signs. What was it? New Leaf got a large sign. I guess New Leaf, you wonder want to call them corporate. Well, I guess business, if you will, signs. New Leaf has been under a cloud for me ever since it colluded with this destruction of public space in front of its Pacific Avenue store, allowing the fencing off of 2/3 of the sidewalk. But I buy at New Leaf now, and I buy at the kiosks there because they have opened up that area to people who want to sit there. At least I haven't heard of any complaints. If you've been, by the way, denied access to those areas, I'd like to know about it. That should be a public area. That should have been a public area. That was a public area until the redevelopment agency, the hosts, the downtown association, the police department, and the city council all got together in a huddle in the back room and did their dirty shit on that stuff. And New Leaf was a part of that. They weren't perhaps an actively initiating party, but it would not have gone forward without their okay. It was in front of their store. So anyway, it was nice to have a big New Leaf banner in the New Year's parade, I suppose, but at the cost of eliminating all other banners, rather sad situation. Anyway, this One Dance Summit that's happening January 12th through the 14th is going to be a rather costly affair, $100 for 3 days, I understand. And there may be some way to get special discount tickets. I'm not sure. I think if you go online at onedancesummit.org, I think you can get more information about it, and perhaps a listener who knows more about One Dance can call in and talk more about the schedule. But on the Tuesday after next, there will be a regular city council meeting at 3 o'clock and at 7 o'clock, and I believe members of the One Dance Summit are going to be attending the city council meeting around the issue of the criminalization of homeless people in Santa Cruz. We know, of course, that homeless people are never going to be criminalized in Santa Cruz. Mike Rotkin and Scott Kennedy, our mayor, would never allow that. As Mike Rotkin has insisted, we do the most for cities of any city up and down the coast for the homeless, and the police are really giving us clear and strict and careful guidelines, and unlike in Carmel, they don't beat you up and drop you out of town. They simply gently wake you and tell you that unless you move, you're going to get a sleeping ticket, but then only under the most exigent circumstances, only if there's the most dire need to do that. Do you believe that? Well, then you've been listening to the city council for too long. But if you want to join this kind of protest, and apparently there's significant organizing going on around this, you can contact HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We're going to be there as one of the contingents at 423-HUF, 423-4833. We're talking about the city's law that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night or to cover up with bedding until 8:30 in the morning on any public and most private property, or much private property, I should say. You're allowed to sleep in a backyard or a side yard hidden from view from the street. Unless, of course, they decide to go after you for zoning problems. You can't sleep in your own vehicle on public streets, and very soon, and I hope to have more details on this at the next show, you will not be able to park your own vehicle on a public street without a permit, thanks to the latest brainchild of Matt Farrell and the Santa Cruz City Council under the very liberal Smiley Riley when she was mayor, still on the council as a council member, and of course backed by Rotkin and Kennedy, who are now the lead mayor and vice mayor, or I should say vice mayor and mayor. So that's coming up, and I'll be giving you more details on that on Thursday. You can always also come to the HUF meeting, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which meets every Wednesday at 8:30 at Baker Square Restaurant near Denny's on Ocean Street. Don't go to Denny's, you won't find us, but check out Baker Square, and you will. And that's a meeting which Glenn here occasionally shows up at. Glenn has been listening pensively to this entire show. Glenn, do you have any further thoughts on anything happening around Santa Cruz? You're out there in the weather. You're not using the homeless service center, are you?
Well, no. Well, yeah, I use the facilities.
Not the shelter, though.
No, I don't use the sleeping quarters over there, but then I got a dry tent, which is, they don't usually make them dry. You know, I happen to get one that stays dry.
You have a place to put it where you're assured the police aren't going to harass you?
No, I'm not sure. I got busted once, but it was right after Jimmy Klein died, and apparently they did a sweep of everything, but only one person knew where I was, so I don't even know how they found me. It's an absolutely invisible location. Nobody's ever been in there. I don't know how that happened.
And I know that you've got a number of concerns that you regularly bring up at Huff meetings. Well, actually, new concerns at different meetings. By the way, for those of you who are interested, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe Loudoun Nelson Center is open again, and I believe that means that the Potter's Hand, which does its 11 o'clock meal, and it's still going on, is doing its meal today. And that meal is... You've got a lot of good stuff for those who aren't vegetarians. It's got, you know, bacon and eggs and toast and other stuff. You ever had their meal? Their 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I've been there twice.
How is it?
It's okay. I mean, if you haven't had bacon in a long time, you know, like a couple of years, like I hadn't had it for like 3 or 4 years, it's a good idea. Otherwise, it's I don't know. It's a bit of a put down, you know.
Oh, really? How so?
Well. It's like they're not tuned into the homeless situation at all, you know. It's almost a preset antagonistic relationship between the staff, which may or may not be long-term staff, you know, for that event.
Well, I know that they've gotten some positive reviews from a lot of homeless people on the street when they were serving, as they were serving later in the day before the Downtown Association and the Redevelopment Agency and the police and the various kind of players there. Essentially, according to Dennis Adams, the pastor who runs it, drove them away from their spot near the Cooper House. So they were getting some positive reviews then.
Well, yeah, but I've only been there twice. The first time I went there, you know, the police made a bust for somebody who was making bird calls, you know.
For bird calls?
Bird calls.
Did they have a permit to make bird calls?
Well, you know, they weren't loud by the time they went and got inside. I mean, they were inside the building complaining about bird calls outside, you know, in the outside area.
Were these inaccurate bird calls? Perhaps bird calls that didn't really accurately reflect the proper bird? I mean...
Well, I'm sure they couldn't figure out which bird it was.
Were they giving the bird to the police? Is that the problem?
No, I really didn't, you know, I mean, this was, you know, as redneck as you can look... person, but I don't see why that means that all of a sudden we have to give up a sacrifice that may or may not be a Christian sacrifice having to do with a church-run lunch, you know, for the homeless. I'm not into that kind of scene whatsoever.
So, there's that meal happening at 11 o'clock for those who are interested, again, at Loudoun Nelson Center. And they may be serving again downtown. I was told they had moved not back to where they were, their old location sort of across from the Cinema 9, but they were either in an alley nearby, you know, discreet and out of sight, thank you, or possibly on another street corner, and I'm going to try to get more information on that. If anybody has more information out there, call in. By the way, while I'm chatting up the free food and free meal situation, Food Not Bombs still needs volunteers. 425-3345. 425-3345 is the voicemail to call if you want to help do some cooking and preparing. And also, they were, of course, under some attack in the last several months, both en route to delivering food and also being surveilled by health department officials and police. I haven't heard of any further negative accounts, but it's important to keep watch on this because it seems to be an ever-present concern. If we're vigilant, if we're militant, we can, you know, keep that food accessible to people. Any comments on Food Not Bombs, Glenn?
Oh, I'd rather not. I don't have. I'd have to lie.
I see. Well, it's okay. Not everybody. We don't simply have one opinion here at the Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hate speech against Food Not Bombs is tolerated on this particular show, provided it's accurate and.
Well, it goes back a long ways anyhow. I don't, you know, I mean, it's not like it's
to encourage it, mind you.
Well, it's not run by the same people. I mean, I wouldn't say, I don't know if it's, I mean, I would say it turns over, and I haven't even eaten there in a long time, so I couldn't even give you, you know.
We have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hello?
Free Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
Robert.
Yo.
Hi. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
There's been a lot of talk on your show today about gentrification, mm-hmm. and one of the driving forces behind gentrification are these sort of big cookie cutter type stores. The Gap has been bandied about earlier.
Right.
I guess my question then is your choice of meeting venue being
Baker Square.
A huge corporate cookie-cutter restaurants such as Baker Square, why don't you patronize one of the local restaurants? Mm-hmm. And I'm at work at a local business, so I need to get back to that. But if you could answer that, address that issue,
sure.
How that lines up with your other views on gentrification, I'm missing something. So
sure.
Anyway, thanks.
Well, actually, I'm sort of a anti-gentrification man by day, and by night I sneak down to the Gap and buy a few things and a few things from Borders. Actually, Baker Square isn't really a restaurant we patronize. They allow us to use the space there, essentially buying nothing. So essentially, we get free space there. I mean, occasionally I buy coffee, you know. So it is true, I spend a little bit of money at Baker Square, but I don't really patronize them in the sense that, I encourage people to come and spend money at Baker Square. Baker Square, however, to its credit, has contributed pies to homeless events, and as have some other restaurants around town. I mean, I patronize local stores like the Bagelry. I even gone and chains as well as Noah's Bagels occasionally. I'm not as fastidious as I might be, though. Borders, though, I set foot in there frequently. I have never paid a penny for anything in Borders, I will have to say, in Santa Cruz. So. That's the full expose on that, and you can think of it what you want. It's kind of just become a place that allows people to show up that hour of the morning. We also, the Union Cafe is another place that SAFE meets. That's SAFE, the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, which is the street performers' new union, and we considered other places. There are problems with a lot of these places. For example, the Cafe Pergolisi evicted activist Steve Argue at one point, and I'm awfully sensitive to cafes that bar people, and apparently it did him. So whenever the chance of meeting there, I'm sensitive to that fact, because I for years was barred from the Java House previously, but which was the Union Cafe was previously known as the Java House, which barred other homeless activists, I think, without good reason. And finally we got back in when groups insisted that they would simply hold their meetings elsewhere unless everyone were allowed in. So maybe, I'd like to see a policy, and I'm kind of jumping around the map on this issue, that requires the cafes, to, after a month, to reconsider their banning policies. But this isn't really about corporate and patronizing corporate cafes. So I certainly would invite, if the caller would like to come to a Huff meeting and has another suggestion as to where we should go, I'm sure that we could consider maybe meeting in another place and getting some of his input. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hi. This idea that somehow small local businesses that exploit their labor and so forth are somehow more progressive than corporate, places like Baker Square, I don't really see the difference. I see a lot of these small businesses downtown being behind the downtown ordinances, being behind the sleeping ban, being behind a lot of the repressive activities that go on from the city council and the local police. And in many cases, small businesses are worse than big businesses because they have a smaller profit margin. They can afford less in terms of different situations, paying workers and so forth, and a lot of the best jobs are with big corporations where there's a union, and I don't think the answer is smaller. I think the answer lies elsewhere. I think it lies in bigger and centralization and socialism, not in small businesses that are more exploitive and that really have had a very bad track record here in Santa Cruz and exploiting poor people and keeping homeless people down.
And of course, you would accept the Cafe Pergolisi from that analysis, sure.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, and my barring from there was very political. They didn't like the fact that I was coming in and ordering coffee and reading for long periods of time. This is what they one of the things they said. The original complaint was that this woman came in with me with incense. Well, I couldn't control the fact that she had incense, and it wasn't up to me that she brought incense in. I wouldn't bring incense into an establishment. But it's a very minor thing, and it wasn't something I did. So they were mad about that. And then I said, well, I'm a good customer here. They said, no, you're not. You come in, you just order a cup of coffee, you sit around for an hour, and you don't buy anything. I'd buy coffee. But it was also political, because they had, the owner there had stated to me at one point some very pro-sleeping ban things and anti-homeless stuff. And I knew there was a political motivation behind it as well. Yeah, the Pergolesi is a place I'd urge people not to go to at all, actually. And there's some other local businesses, small local businesses that, you know, and then it becomes hard to decide where are you going to go get certain things you want or need. And in a lot of cases, you have to buy from big corporations, and I don't really differentiate them that much. I mean, all in a capitalist society, everything you buy is produced through exploitation, whether it be big or small. And you know, this idea of supporting the small capitalists as if the small capitalists are somehow progressive, I don't agree with. I don't think small capitalists are more progressive than big ones.
We're talking, of course, with Steve Argue, who is you've been active in running for city council. You've been to jail for selling a street newspaper. You actually served time in jail for defending a woman and her child against a police assault from a police officer who was later let go from the police department or moved to another police department, Officer David LaFaver. To be candid, punched the cop, and in order to, as I recall, defend the woman. But you've been also writing a lot regularly on the internet about a number of issues, and you have, I guess, been doing some union organizing recently.
Well, not really union organizing per se, but I've been active a little bit in the new union that I'm in, which is the Service Employees International Union, Local 415. In the home care workers section.
And that contract is coming up in 2 days, as I think I mentioned earlier, in closed session, at least for the police and the fire. Any thoughts about the...
Well, our contract is coming up in 7 months.
Ah,
and it's my opinion that the police don't even belong in the union in any form. I think they're a conservatizing force, and I think their role in society is to break unions and used against the poor and against activists and people of color, and I don't think police belong in the unions, but that's another issue. One thing that's happening now with Schwarzenegger being elected, and not just Schwarzenegger being elected, the crisis of capitalism, the massive problems that are being had by the capitalist system, is the fact that budget cuts are going on, and what Schwarzenegger has proposed are big cuts in home services, which would actually cut 75,000 or services for 75,000 disabled people in the state, and it's estimated that about 300 local in-home support people will lose jobs if these proposed measures go through. They include measures that would get rid of programs where domestic chores are done for disabled people who require those to be done. The persons with severe disabilities and receive advance payment to pay providers that come in and do work for them no longer would be able to get that. And it would end funding for services provided by spouses or parents for minor children. Which is a very serious thing, because in many cases, children, the only real good providers you can get for them are the parents, and they need to be reimbursed for the work they're doing, because people need to live, and you know, severely disabled children do need that kind of support, and they need it from, and the parents are the best providers. And then also there'd be cuts for persons who qualify for Medi-Cal, PCS with share of cost, and residual program also pays the difference between the age, blind, and disabled medically needy maintenance need income level, and applicable supplemental security income, state supplementary program grants. So these are cuts that are being proposed by Schwarzenegger, and there's going to be a protest in Sacramento that's coming up on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, and people are going to be leaving from our Union Hall up on Mission Street. We've got a bus going. We're trying to get more members of the union to get on that bus. And people who want more information on going to this protest can call me at 454-0272. We want to get members of the SEIU to be on the bus. We want the union leadership wants a certain number of union members on there, and we're close to having that number. So just a couple more people or three more people, we get this bus going so that people can go that way, and then there's going to also be cars going and some carpooling. So give me a call if you want to go. The number is 454-0272.
When is that leaving, Steve?
It's leaving at 11:30 from the Union Hall there.
Day after tomorrow, right?
Yeah, and the Union Hall is at 517 Mission.
Cross Street?
The Cross Street. I'm not sure what the Cross Street is there, actually.
Any other big buildings up there which are recognizable? Is it near Safeway? Is it near McDonald's?
No, it's towards the other end of Mission. It's not quite like...
On the edge of town?
Yeah, it's kind of near the Presbyterian Church down there.
Okay.
Sort of the direction of Emily's Bakery, I think just a little further.
Uh-huh, okay.
Towards
517 Mission, 11:30 a.m. Tuesday.
People who want to be on the bus should give me a call, though, at 454-0272.
Okay.
And because the bus may be actually canceled if we don't get a few more people, but I think we will, but it'd be good, especially for union people. And then once we have the number of union people we need, we could probably get some other people on there too that aren't with the union. But, you know, the union chartering this bus is concerned about, you know, getting union people on there.
Okay.
So, you know, these cuts proposed by Schwarzenegger are, actually, I mean, part of what this would do is, part of it makes no sense, because a lot of people would be put into convalescent homes as a result of these cuts, and that would actually cost more money. So this wouldn't be saving the system any money. But the whole thing in terms of looking at cuts for the people who really need these services, is outrageous, and I want to really encourage people to come out to Sacramento for this, to protest this.
Hey, thank you for calling in, Steve.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye. And it's Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Stay with us.
And that
that was Mark Levy. Hey, Mr. Whitehouse. We have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hello.
Hi. We were talking off-air briefly about what's the point of ticketing people for sleeping in their own vehicles if you're just going to cause more fines, right? And then and they can't pay them anyway. Isn't that sort of counterproductive?
Right. And it costs money to write the tickets. I think someone told me that they charge you $10 to ride a ticket. I mean, they or something like that. If you they give you a ticket, they charge you $10 to, you know, like cover the officer's salary. And I was thinking, wait a minute, isn't that what our local taxes are about, state taxes?
I'm not aware of that. I'm aware that, for example, if you're booked in jail, you have to, and you lose your case, you have to pay your booking fees. There may be court costs and restitution costs. And if you get a fix-it ticket, you have to pay some administrative charge. But I hadn't heard about that specifically, about writing a ticket giving you, you know, an additional $10 surcharge. But indeed, a ticket for sleeping outside or sleeping in your vehicle, it's $54. A ticket for camping, as Glenn camps in his tent, is $162. Do it twice within 24 hours, that's up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine.
But if you are homeless, and which means you can't afford a place to live in the first place, how can you afford to pay the ticket?
Well, it's a good Samaritan approach, see, because then they'll put you in jail and you'll have a wonderful place to stay for the winter.
Right, but then it costs more money to keep people in jail than it does to just let them be on the street and possibly have an opportunity to get work and make money and pay taxes.
Well, yeah, but you see, this puts workers to work building more prisons, and that helps our economy to grow.
Well, okay, so
I'm making ridiculous arguments, but as you can see, there's not really some good arguments about respond to what you're saying. I can't really give you the good arguments. There aren't any good arguments.
Let's jump to the next issue about bureaucrats and the like, because obviously they are hoping to, you know, perpetuate this issue. Why aren't there people locally who are putting measures on the ballot to not give bureaucrats, state and local, any raises, period, until people who need medical services and social services, such as this guy was just talking about, until those counties can afford to pay for those services? I mean, I don't get how they keep cutting back on these services for people who really need them. You know, it's apparent to me that none of their family members ever have needed these services, or no one they know ever needs any of these services that they're cutting back on. But I think that, you know, if you can take the money that these people give themselves in raises every year and use that to balance budget, because obviously that's where it comes from, and help to pay for these other services and, you know, keep people employed.
You know, I
think that, you know, that would help to alleviate some of the problems they have as far as having to cut back on services.
Well, I think that actually that's a proposal by some folks at this upcoming One Dance Summit, January 12th through 14th, which is to take the top 2% and pay for national health care for the rest of the country. I don't know how the figures work out. I presume they must have gotten something on that. Locally, groups like SCAN have made a kind of pale efforts to chop from the top, as they call it, to cut back the salaries of people like City Manager for Life, Dick Wilson, who has a $160,000 a year salary, and essentially to fund the situation for to keep social services running that would otherwise Rotkin and Kennedy are always threatening to cut. In fact, and then they arrange to do this all, of course, in closed meetings behind closed doors, and then come up with their final plan and do the quick ram it through the council deal. Rotkin and Kennedy, the same vice mayor and mayor who dumped these senior citizens at De Anza, do the senior citizens sellout. You know, the answer, the short answer to your question is because people have not organized to demand it is the reason it isn't happening. As soon as people organize to do something about it, you can bet your ass it's going to happen.
I would say that, you know, based upon what I see going on in Santa Cruz, I mean, people, I, it's not all people, I don't want to say all people, but the majority of the people I find give lip service to, you know, the complaints that they have. I'm thinking, you know, why is it something being done? You know, why aren't you saying, hey, this guy, this city council person just got a raise, or, you know, this city council, this local official, state official just got a raise. Wait a minute. We need to balance this budget, or we need money for these programs. This guy does not get a raise until, you know, we get money for these programs. If there's money in the state coffers for people to get raises, then there's money in the state coffers for us to pay for benefits for the people who are paying those people's salaries.
Well, do you have any stats on what kind of raises people are getting? I mean, I know that there was some concern, for example, for the Metro Writers Union, that some from Paul Marshall and Sampson, who speaks on the air occasionally, about how some bus drivers are getting, you know, up in the upper echelons are getting raises while services are being cut back. But I don't know if this is generally true in terms of across the board. I know that unions are weaker than ever nationally, and I don't know. I mean, I imagine CEOs are getting raises, but I don't know. I don't have the figures in front of me. Glenn here has a comment on that.
Yeah, I was one of the things that I wanted to mention was that I think people don't organize very well here, and I've certainly noticed that over quite a long period of time that I've been here homeless all the time, is that the cost of living is constantly going up, and the stress that places, plus there's a kind of a resistance to the hippie presence here structurally anyway. Only so many, you might say, are tolerated by the Republican career government people here. There's just a lot of, there's an infrastructure against community organizing, and there's also the cost of living, the antagonistic relationship between the landlords and the public that choose to live here. Further, I had a possible idea on what to do about the problems that obviously are of a concern to you. And that is, this is, you know, I'm educated, I have a degree in philosophy, even though I'm homeless, was to have a recall, to do a recall of one of the city council members, one or two city council members who would otherwise be reelected this upcoming election, to do a recall so that position becomes available to another candidate, because we really do not have a recognized alternative candidate who has made it to city council. Despite Fitzmaurice being Green Party, he was not. In fact, he's almost like a dark horse. I don't think anybody knew he was Green Party before he got into office. And so we don't really have a recognizably alternative person in city council. And they a lot of lip service, they say they are, but we don't know them. You know, we don't know who these people are.
Colin?
Okay. And my final comment is you know, something that's counter to or totally different than, you know, what we've been talking about. But, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, the invasion of Iraq all the time. And I would put this out to anybody out there who's listening and comment on it is, and I would like to know, where are those right-to-lifers when it comes to dropping bombs on Afghanistan and Iraq and, you know, the brutality that the people undergo in Nigeria, you know, at the hands, I believe it's in Nigeria, for the oil, and Venezuela, and who is it that has the major oil holdings over in the, what is it, Philippines or something, Indonesia, I believe it's BP and Chevron or some corporation like that, Shell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are these right-to-life people, you know, who say that life is so precious, and, you know, they say, well, you know, let's not allow abortions, but yet when people are alive, they don't have any answers for keeping them alive. And my premise is that, you know, if you are a right-to-lifer, then everyone, what you're saying is that everyone has a right to life. Every being has a right to life. And that you're defending against killing these human beings. I don't see them holding any banners in any protest or any parades. You know, I don't see them or hear them in the mix in Florida or anywhere else, you know, as far as right to life is concerned. So that's you might want to address that or invite any of your listeners to who are right to lifers to call in and comment on that.
Okay. Thanks, right. Caller.
Sure.
All righty. Yeah, if we have any actual right-to-lifers listening in this audience, I guess we will have one right-to-lifer calling in at about 12:30. That's the Reverend Wiley Drake, who's a pretty intense right-wing right-to-lifer, or I should say anti-choice person, although, as I've mentioned before, a strong advocate of the rights of homeless people. Maybe I can address that question to him. I mean, my offhand thought, and I'm not a right-to-lifer, so I can't really tell you, but from the reading I've done and the conversations I've had with folks in that position, some folks, we talk to Roman Catholic people, some Roman Catholic people, and they oppose the right to choose, but they also, some of them do, but they also oppose capital punishment. So, I mean, there's a certain, I suppose, consistency there. It's not, you know, it's, as to the war in Iraq, some would claim it's a just war because Saddam Hussein's fictional connections with Al-Qaeda, and the fictional weapons of mass destruction, and the real fact that he was a tin pot dictator, no threat to anybody in the Middle East, but, you know, billed as such by Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. It's, you know, a tiresome, grim, gloomy subject, and actually something I'm going to get into and always do on this show a little bit, because it's, we should be out there picketing at the same time we're picketing these downtown merchants who are through their downtown business association and through the city council repressive laws harassing the poor. We should also be picketing the federal government. We should be picketing Representative Farr and his refusal to, for example, vote against the Syria sanctions, which he supported, the sanctions against the government of Syria as part of Bush's continuing Who's Next Domino campaign as the U.S. government moves to go after one government after another. We got a call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. Not to harp or anything, but I feel like two callers ago misrepresented my statements, Steve Argue, when he called in. I never said the words that that I feel that local businesses are somehow more progressive than corporate chain stores or anything. I never said those words.
Okay.
And just this idea that was put, I mean, you didn't really answer my question. I mean, you kind of just, you know, kind of bandied about just some idea that a couple of local businesses may be somewhat repressive or in support of repressive ordinances, and that's true. I think that's been demonstrated in the past. However, I you know, in terms of, like, people being banished from certain areas, it just becomes like you start to look at it and see a pattern, like, okay, Steve Argue, for example, case in point, has been banished from the Pergolesi, the Poet and Patriot, and the ASTI, and that, like, you start to see a pattern here, and you kind of question, like, maybe it's not the businesses or the owners of the business, maybe it's just that the person in question is kind of an asshole, you know? I mean, I'm not saying Steve's an asshole, I'm just, you know, I'm putting that as a notion, you know, maybe, like, his behavior in these places was not what they wanted. I don't know. I mean, you start to question it when you start to see somebody banned from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 places. Maybe it's not the place in question. Maybe it's the person. You know what I mean?
Well, for example, I've been banned from Bookshop Santa Cruz, Cafe Royale, and I guess it's now, what's it called? Rosa McCann's, but Lula Carpenter's.
Okay.
I've been banned from the ID building when it was run by Stuart Martin.
Right.
I've been recently banned from the Pacific Trading Company.
And you would have
Jackson
us believe
Street.
That all these places are what? I don't understand. Maybe
well,
it's something
reason,
that
I
you're
can tell
doing.
You the reason in each case that I was banned. Some might say it was because I was an asshole, but that isn't what they would. The particulars had to do with the fact that we were protesting discriminatory policies against poor and homeless
okay, but
people.
Maybe it's your approach then that needs to be changed. I mean, maybe you're not getting through to people with the tactics that you've used in the past.
Well,
maybe it's time for sort of a sabbatical and re-examining tactics.
Nothing wrong with re-examining tactics, but I think that
and questioning deeply what's been effective and what's not, what
sure.
needs to be abandoned as a tactic, and
that's one
what
possibility.
Needs to be promoted.
But another possibility is that these people insist on continuing the policies they have, regardless of how nice you are to
okay.
them, and they don't like high-profile protesters.
So then what? I mean, then when do we resort to you know, Molotov cocktails at, like, wee hours of the morning? I mean, what is the solution?
Well, that's always the question. how do you, obviously I think the solution is for stronger community organizing around these issues, you know, and having...
And what is going to get stronger community organizing? Is it going to be yelling at people and accusing them of not doing enough, not being hardcore enough, or is it like maybe like a new way of dialoguing and approaching people?
Well, you're posing, I think, some false dichotomies, and also I think...
Am I?
Yeah,
false?
I think so.
Well,
in other words,
I don't think
yelling at people...
I false dichotomies are you and Steve, frankly.
Well,
you tend to paint things in the best light that's going to shine on your cause, but oftentimes at the expense of the reality of the situation.
Well,
and I disdain distortions of the truth.
Well,
I really like.
I'm glad I do too. You know, but I think for example, Glenn wants to make a comment. Let me quickly do this.
If I have nothing else, I have the muscle to say exactly what's on my mind. I don't distort the truth one little tiny damn bit.
Well, actually, he was. I think Vinny was referring to me and not to...
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, for example, people are highly critical of the Gap, and they haven't been successful in blocking the Gap. Does that mean they should stop protesting the Gap?
No, but look at their approach. You know, they're not out there, like, all angry and pissed off and, like...
But they haven't been successful, have they?
Actually putting people off.
Have they been successful in stopping people?
I think they've been
off?
Successful somewhat in at least, like...
Obviously, the extent to which you do it, and I agree with you that some people in the community respond to one form of protest more than another, but I guess I take issue with you in believing that, you know, specifically and clearly targeting these businesses for the kinds of clear connections they have with the city council's anti-homeless policies is a mistake if you do so in a high-profile way. We're not screaming at people.
No.
I do raise my voice when the police come and start hauling people away for having a political table for more than an hour, and I think that's appropriate to do. Others may disagree with me, but I think it is a way of drawing the clear picture of what's going on here in Santa Cruz. We have police state activity happening here.
Okay, I think that, unfortunately, my view differs from yours, and I think that that kind of behavior actually kind of alienates most people that you're trying to reach. That's my opinion.
Okay.
And I have to go back to work.
Hey, well, thank you
Bye-bye.
For calling. Bye-bye. So, what's your opinion out there, callers? We actually haven't had a lot of examples of this recently. There hasn't been much in terms of Pacific Trading Company protest in a high-profile way for several months, although I encourage people not to patronize that store and to tell them why. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, this is Steve Argue again.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. You know, Vinny calls in. He accuses me of putting words in his mouth and saying that these local businesses are more progressive than the bigger businesses, and saying that that's not what he said at all. But then he goes on to get on you for patronizing these bigger businesses. So obviously he still sees a difference there. He thinks that in some way these local businesses are more progressive than the bigger ones, and you know, and so I think I stand by what I said about where Vinny stands on that, and I don't think these local businesses are more progressive, and frankly I don't think it makes too much difference where people buy things, although you know we have to think about that a little bit. I'm not going to Safeway or Albertsons right now because of the strike going on in the South of the union workers down there right now. But this accusation he makes that I'm somehow an asshole getting kicked out of places, what I represented on Pergolesi was 100% true of how I was kicked out of there, and it was politically motivated. The fact that there are people in this town who don't like me, and there's a lot of people who do like me and do like what I do and do like you and do like what you do, even though I don't like everything you do. I like a lot of what you do, but whatever. The fact that there's people who don't like me, and especially owners of shops and different and even bars that don't like me in this town and don't like me politically, I think is one of the motivations behind some of these things that have gone on. Vinny brings up the situation at the Poet and Patriot. The Poet and Patriot incident where I got kicked out of there, and actually I could probably get back in if I went in and talked to Chris Matthews, but what happened is this bartender there, Deidre, overheard me talking to a friend about the war in Afghanistan, and this was about a month after September 11th, actually a little less than a month after September 11th, And I was speaking out opposing a U.S. war in Afghanistan, and I was actually speaking in terms of calling for a victory for the Afghani people against the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, saying that if that doesn't happen, the U.S. is going to move on to other countries. So I was calling for the military defeat of the United States in Afghanistan. Well, that pissed Deidre off, who has a different outlook on the world than I do, and she asked me. I had just come in. I wasn't drunk. I had just ordered my first beer, and I had just taken a sip off of it. And she asked me to finish my beer and leave. To which I said okay, and I continued talking to my friend, but we continued talking what we were talking about. She then went to the cash register, got the money for the beer, gave me the money, and asked me to leave. I left, but I got kicked out because of my opinion on Afghanistan. Now, you know, things happen, and you know, to call me an asshole for being kicked out for political reasons by people who have a different view of the world, and especially a lot of people at that time, you were really fighting against the current and speaking out against the war 1 month after the September 11th attack. But for someone who claims to be progressive like Vinny to be attacking me so vehemently with that and other slanders that he's posted on indie media, makes me question where Vinny's coming from, and him telling you need to reassess where you're coming from, including, you know, I mean, what's he telling you to do? Sell out like these other people who are supposedly accomplishing something in the city council, or sell out like, you know, like people who are accomplishing nothing? I think you, me, and other people who really take on the system are accomplishing much more than these people who are trying to be friendly, even though probably nobody's really accomplishing all that much right now because we don't have the numbers organized and fighting back. But what we have in our ideas and what we're promoting, we have the seeds of those ideas that are going to actually make a difference. Those who are trying to change the government by being friends with the government, or change, you know, the system by licking their asses, are accomplishing nothing. And I really question where Vinny's coming from, his whole supposed anarchist outlook, which is a lot more liberal than revolutionary in any way, and I'm proud to be a revolutionary socialist that sees through a lot of this crap and sees that we need a total transformation of society, and that you know, the police and some people in this society are not going to be your friends when you and small business owners aren't going to be your friends when you take on their system, when you take on the fact that people are being exploited, that people are being hurt by the system in many ways, homeless people, by its wars, by all these things going on. And I'm proud of the work I do, and if I'm going to be called an asshole for standing up for a better society and even being victimized for it at times, so be it. But I think Vinny really needs to reevaluate where he's coming from. Nope. I needed to say that.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
All righty. Yeah, it also could be that, you know, not everybody knows all the details of these evictions and expulsions from different places. And I think people can also disagree on tactics. And also people sometimes get, frankly, hot-headed. They do. We all get passionate. And we all get frustrated because we aren't, as Steve just said, getting terribly far with where we're going. And, you know, it's easy to look for scapegoats and among ourselves. You know, the classic phrase is, you know, the left's firing squad is in a circle and all that sort of thing. So, you know, that's a continuing concern. I have respect for both Vinny and the work he does, and Steve and the work he does, and for me and the work I do, such as it is. And let's see who's on the line. I hope we don't have this endless continuation of this debate. I'm going to have to cut it short pretty quick. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm going to try to keep my comments brief. Just a couple clarifications, first and foremost of which is I do not self-describe myself as either A, progressive, or B, an anarchist. I'm just a human being interested in truth and justice. And I guess I'm to believe that as soon as the Safeway workers win their health care, that Steve will go back happily shopping at Safeway, while I'll be consuming organically grown, hopefully locally grown produce at one of the local markets, whether or not they have not come out strong enough in, you know, opposing the downtown ordinances or not. I'm still going to not buy, as I have done for years, not buy food at Safeway. It's a huge corporation. They are one of the largest in the world, and I'm not going to support them ever. So anyway, I just want to clarify those quick points. The other things, maybe me and Steve will have to take up with each other at some other time. Thanks.
Sure, I don't mean to cut you off. I just
bye-bye.
Okay. I mean, I think frankly that airing these differences is not a bad thing, and you know, people also can air them with some heat. I mean, I've had differences with all people concerned, and no doubt I will again in the future. The question is, how and when, well, the differences are important, but also the points of similarity and how we can come together. Glenn, go ahead.
Yeah,
sure,
I just thought, well, I think what started this was that I revealed a reality that is so different from the one we have either believed about the third world or having not traveled there. I travel there quite frequently. And I think and the changes shocked me of what is going down there. For instance, a very leftist country, the most leftist in the New World, has a peacekeeping force in Iraq to support the American presence there to assist in the American efforts in Iraq.
You're talking about Nicaragua, right?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, as I said, I disagree with you. Nicaragua hasn't been leftist for 13 years, but,
well, I see, but they were promoting Ortega when I was down there. They couldn't have done so unless he was president.
No, he wasn't president, but there is a rapprochement with
and
him.
And I don't. Well, you didn't know about El Salvador. And also, Ortega, you just pulled up Ortega, and it was 2001 in which there was another election, but the 2003 reference, there are frequently turnovers in elections every year. For instance, the previous president of Mexico only lasted 1 year in office, and we've had like two successions of 1 year long terms in Mexico.
But again, with reference to this debate with between Vinnie Steve and the concerns you feel that you have something specific to say about that.
I'm surprised at how well informed this person is. He could find out that Steve Argue had been kicked out of three places, and all he is an individual concerned citizen. That is mathematically impossible.
Well, remember, all these folks know each other, and they know each other's friends, and this is a small town. We've been to different places, and I think that some misinformation does get kind of spread around, and that's why I'm glad when the actual person at least can give their own account of what happened in these circumstances. However, I'm going to move on now to another subject. You're welcome to hang if you want, Glenn. There's a meeting tomorrow night of SAFE, that's the Society for Artistic and Artistic Freedom and Expression in Santa Cruz, which is a rather cumbersome way, perhaps, of describing the street performers getting together to try to restore basic rights they thought they had and actually gain basic rights they think they should have. And a brochure has been put together. They're going to meet tomorrow night at the Union Cafe at 6 o'clock, in case you'd like to come on down. It's a public meeting. And the idea is to generate support for restoring the voluntary street performance guidelines, and also for establishing the right to, let's say, do the kind of thing that it's legal to do on the streets of New York City, which is, at least until they eliminate all the vendors, is to vend your art. Try to do it in Santa Cruz, you still get hassled big time. Anyway, Mike True and Joe Williams have been working on a flyer, as have I, and I'm going to read you the tentative text of this flyer to give you an idea what SAFE is up to. Join SAFE, the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, to keep Santa Cruz safe for traditional First Amendment freedom on the streets. Public access to public spaces, reaffirming local defense of the United States Constitution for street performers. Help build a community coalition with SAFE. Our goals, 1, to make local law and police practice responsible, sensible, and respectful. 2, to make the city government of Santa Cruz change its legalistic repression of those on the street. 3, to restore healthy exercise of the rights of any member of our community regarding the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble. That's the quoted words from the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We view the downtown ordinances enacted by the Santa Cruz City Council in July of 2002 and January of 2003 as an unnecessary and oppressive restriction of basic civil liberties. Further, City Council promises to monitor and review the consequences of these laws on downtown stakeholders has not been done. Because no council attention has been given to, quote, unintended consequences of the laws, with the exception of the Tom Noddy jugglers controversy, SAFE hopes to press for badly needed change with public demonstrations, legal challenges, organized events, lobbying council members, and making connections with street performers and other communities. Our collective voices need to be heard. We, as a community, must remove these heavy-handed ordinances and reinstate the voluntary street performers' guidelines. This document has been successfully used as the key agreement between downtown business operators, residents, and local street performers for over 20 years. Changes will not come about without a general groundswell of grassroots public support. Local media largely ignores abuses and justifies merchant and police repression. This community must be made aware of a continuance of ticket writing and arrest by city police and street performers and others whose only crimes have been to stand or sit in the wrong place or stay in one area, quote, too long, or to seek a peaceful collection of donations. And where is this happening? On public sidewalks. Not only does this engage the local police in a costly diversion from their true priorities, but it also costs the community a loss of goodwill, a hostile environment, and the exclusion of valuable street performers apprehensive of harassment. Help us preserve our social and cultural heritage, protecting the musicians, street performers, and artists that have made Santa Cruz the unique community it is. To this end, we are urging all interested parties to stand with us in unity and spirit. Please join us. Currently, weekly meetings are scheduled at 6 p.m. at the Union Center Coffee House, first Monday of each month, and Wednesdays throughout the remaining weeks. Preserve the uniqueness and diversity that is Santa Cruz. For more information, call, and I believe that number is missing here, but that is Mike True's number, and if Mike's listening, he can call in and give it, or if you don't have it and you'd like it, if you call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, I'll give it to you. Leave me a message. And again, the downtown ordinances are laws restricting innocent use of public sidewalks, such as Municipal Code 5.43, restricting sitting down, Municipal Code 9.50, and peaceful panhandling, Municipal Code 9.10. Laws banning display for donation or sale of artistic work, MC 5.42, infringing freedom of religion for spiritual readers, MC 5.56, and criminalizing so-called unattended property, MC 15.32. Arbitrary and discriminating police use of laws such as unreasonable noise, MC again for Municipal Code 9.36, and disturbing the peace, Penal Code 4152 and 4153. Some of these laws and police practices predate 2002. And the street performers' voluntary guidelines were developed by performers and merchants under the leadership of Tom Noddy and Jan Luby in 1980. The Street Performers Voluntary Guidelines fundamentally ask performers, residents, and merchants to move on after an hour if they find the performance uncomfortable conversely, to tolerate an hour of performance beyond the time of that warning. Used in place of court and police action, these voluntary understandings allowed a much more flexible, friendly, and responsible relationship between performers and merchants. And there's more of the same, but if you're interested in hearing more of the same, come to the meeting tomorrow, 6 o'clock at the Union Street Cafe, which I'm not sure how they stand on the downtown ordinances. I know that, again, as I said, I was barred from the previous cafe that was there until they were forced to open up their doors, and I guess there were changes, and people, you know, changes do happen. I've seen some changes, too, through negotiation, not just through confrontation, and sometimes through a combination of confrontation and negotiation. Change happened in the coffee roasting company. I think we're able to get Jeannie back into the coffee roasting company, back and down Pacific Avenue. We're still having problems with the coffee roasting company and the sheriff's substation, of course, out in Aptos with Jerry Henry and Richard Quigley, as you know. And Quigley is still filing his lawsuit. Indeed, has filed his lawsuit against the sheriff, Mark Tracy, for a campaign of harassment over the last 8 years, and specifically going to KSCO and getting him fired, or in essence, getting him off, pressuring KSCO to get him off the air, which apparently was successful. So we're coming up upon an incoming call soon from Wiley Drake, and we can ask that right-to-life question, I guess, if I remember it properly. Although I think Wiley probably favors the war in Iraq as well as opposing abortion, so he's going to see no contradiction in that. What's happening in Iraq? Well, Saturday, insurgents hit a U.S. base in central Iraq with mortar shells, killing one American soldier and wounding two others, a U.S. military spokesman said Saturday. The mortars struck a base in the Army's 4th Infantry Division near Balad. One of the shells exploded near a trailer used as a bedroom by troops, and a soldier standing in its doorway was killed. Two other soldiers were struck by shrapnel and taken to a combat support hospital, where they were in stable condition. Overnight, the U.S. military bombed the sparsely populated southern edge of Baghdad to root out insurgents believed to be launching mortar shells and rockets, hours after a U.S. military helicopter was shot down east of the capital, killing one soldier. Soon after the helicopter crashed on Friday, the military said attackers posing as journalists fired assault weapons and rocket-propelled grenades at U.S. paratroopers guarding the burning aircraft. But there was confusion, since Reuters news agency reported that its team at the scene was fired at by U.S. troops, and three were later detained by the military. "Our guys are still in detention, and we still haven't been informed of any specific accusations against them," said Andrew Marshall, Reuters bureau chief in Baghdad. Elsewhere, insurgents attacked an American tanker truck convoy, setting one ablaze. Coalition forces raiding a Sunni Muslim mosque arrested 32 suspected non-Iraqi Arab insurgents and seized an arms cache. Hundreds of Iraqis protested outside the mosque after the raid. In Baghdad, a military spokesman said the shelling of the Dura neighborhood was part of an offensive dubbed Operation Iron Grip. Residents said it appeared U.S. fire was targeting fields in the neighborhood. Bordered by date palm farms, the sparsely populated area once was home to a number of former officials in Saddam Hussein's government and is now the site of a U.S. military base. U.S. Army Brigadier General Mark Kimmett said troops from the 82nd Airborne Division were fairly convinced that it was enemy fire that brought down the OH-58 Kiowa Warrior helicopter near Fallujah, a flashpoint in the insurgency. As paratroopers from the 82nd surrounded the crash site, five men wearing black press jackets with "press" clearly written in English fired on them, Kimmett said. He said it was the first time he had heard of assailants in Iraq posing as journalists. The Reuters team was led by Iraqi cameraman Salim Urabi, who was filming from a checkpoint using a camera on a tripod and was wearing a flak jacket, clearly marked "press," Reuters agency said. "We were fired on and we drove away at high speed," driver Ala Nouri said. He said a second car driven by another Iraqi journalist had been fired on in the same incident. One of the cars remained in Fallujah, Reuters said. Kimmett said attackers in two cars fled the scene and that soldiers doing a sweep through the town with helicopters circling overhead tracked down one of the cars and arrested four, quote, enemy personnel. Also Friday, hundreds of angry protesters gathered outside the Ibn Tayyima Mosque after U.S. soldiers and Iraqi Defense Force officers raided the mosque overnight. Kimmett said the U.S. and Iraqi soldiers seized explosives, guns, and ammunition and arrested 32 people believed to be non-Iraqi Arabs, quote, based on their dialect. The military says foreign Islamic militants opposed to the occupation have infiltrated from neighboring borders. A 5,000-gallon oil tanker also erupted in flames near a U.S. military base on the road to the western town of Ramadi. The military said it was in convoy, attacked with a roadside bomb, a grenade, and small arms fire. Three American soldiers suffered burns and shrapnel wounds. In ongoing raids to hunt down former Iraqi officials, U.S. soldiers captured Abu Muhammad, believed to be moving foreign fighters, and cash through a tense area west of Baghdad, and three other suspects, the military said Friday. Soldiers in Samarra blew up the house of Talab Saleh, who is accused of orchestrating attacks against U.S. troops, witnesses said. They said the troops arrested Saleh's wife and brother and said they would not be released until Saleh surrenders. The military had no immediate comment. Now, I read through that entire story, which omits a few things, by the way. It was longer. It's from Associated Press, so it's not some sort of radical news service. There's all kinds of interesting things I could comment on there in that story. We have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Roberto, how are you?
Hey, is this another one of the... are you going to call me an asshole on the line? I can't
you
take
asshole.
It.
You asshole.
Oh, thank you.
No. I would never call you an asshole.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Did you mention the car that was shot up and the family that was killed?
I don't know if I did. This is a Saturday story, and since I think it's already Monday in Iraq, maybe you should bring us up to date.
Yeah, I was on the internet last night, and I heard that they opened fire on a Chevy Caprice, killing like four or five people, including a 9-year-old boy. They just opened fire on it, and there was no, like, it wasn't like coming toward the roadblock or anything. It was just traveling, and
was a preemptive strike. You know, I mean, you have to be careful. Some of these youngsters can grow up to be terrorists.
Yeah, they probably, the kid had an impure thought and said, fuck, I hate this occupation. I'm going to take out one of those soldiers one of these days. And so a red flag went up, and they took him out.
Where did this happen, you know?
I'm not sure exactly. I don't have the, I just read it on the internet last night. I don't have it in front of me right now. But it sounds like to me that the U.S. occupation forces are taking some very well-learned lessons from the Israeli army on blowing up homes of families and detaining families until they get their man, so-called. So, and they're also being taught by the Mossad and by the Israeli army on how to do this occupation. So people should talk more about that, too. Anyway, I got to go.
Okay.
And
well,
I'll
remember,
talk to you later.
Are you patronizing big stores or little stores?
What?
Well, we want to know how which stores you're patronizing, if any.
I'm giving all my money away, and
I'll be down
there rocks and dirt from now on. How's that?
Fair enough.
That beats all you guys out there.
You're better than I am. I know. I
well, but I'll tell you though, it's you know it's kind of tough out there on what to do. Everybody's a consumer. You're a consumer. You know, no matter how much people want to admit it, they have to live in this system. Even though Mr. Argy thinks that other people are living in the so-called system, we all live in the system. We all have to maintain it one way or another. And that includes your electricity, your water, your phone. So if you have those, then we're basically inside the system, and we are trying to change the system from the inside. As far as businesses and all that, I mean, you know, everybody has their own choices they need to make. You know, occasionally I have to go to the Safeway or whatever because I can't afford, you know, fresh organic food like other people can. And I can't afford those things. I got a kid, and I have to, you know, I have to go to the, take what I can get, you know. Sometimes I have to go to the food banks to get that stuff, too.
Well, I hope you don't do any shoplifting at the bookshop Santa Cruz. That's all.
I'll tell you, last night I was at work, and I work at a public building downtown, and a gentleman came in who was very drunk. I don't know if he was homeless or not. I've seen him around before. And he just asked me for help, and I said, well, what do you want me to do? And he says, I just need help. Call 911. And so I go, you hurt or this or that? And he wasn't hurt, you know, like I could see, but I could tell that he was just really tired, and he had wet his pants, and he was really cold. And so I called 911, and a cop came, and the cop was actually very nice. Talked to the guy. The guy said he was having some medical problems. He's just clutching his chest. I don't know if he did or didn't. But they called an ambulance and took him to Dominican. And I think that would be maybe one way to change things is to get all the homeless people to fake like they're having heart attacks and have the ambulances bring them in and keep them warm in the hospital, at least until, you know, fill up the hospital that way or something. I don't know. Just an idea.
I'm afraid that's a terrorist idea. I'll be contacting you later on that issue.
Okay. But, it's really cold out there, and I'm surprised. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there has been death in the last few days, but it's just been extremely cold outside lately.
Yeah,
and I live in a little shack where I don't even have any insulation, you know, and it's freezing. But I can imagine how people are. Like, I've lived out in a Poganet before, and it's cold. It's colder than hell out there, and some people might want to, you know, pretend like they're having some kind of medical problem to go into the hospitals, and that's another reason why, you know, we should have legal places for people to sleep, because those bills go up the state, you know, expenditure and city expenditure. So that's another reason why we should have, you know, I mean, why do we have to have all the churches do all the work, you know? Why can't we have just one place where people can be, you know, if they're homeless?
What about the mayor's lawn?
Well, I think a campground's a good thing during the summer, but like right now, a campground isn't going to do a whole hell of a lot for the weather.
We need some buildings, yeah.
Yeah, people need to be housed. That's
actually,
straight up.
The comments I've been making are actually some of the names of the famous songs from Just Kiddin. One was Sleep on the Mayor's Lawn. The other was Shoplifting at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. I'm just bringing back some of those old tunes.
They're a bunch of sellouts, those hosers. I think Michael Jackson covered one of their songs or something.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Well,
just kidding, get it?
No, just
all right, I'll hang up now and let other important calls come.
I would hope so.
I'm sure other people have responses.
Alrighty.
You should have a debate. Have Vinny and Steve on as a debate show.
We could
maybe
do that.
Big mud wrestling pool or something. Just kidding. I'll see you later, Robert.
Hey, thanks. And in case you wish to debate with me, I'm here, so is Glenn, 427-3772. We will take on all comers, although I think, frankly, we're going to be getting a call shortly from the infamous Wiley Drake, the Wiley, as we call him, down in Southern California. Here's a man who was found guilty of three misdemeanors for putting up homeless people in his church. My goodness, what kind of a guy does that? Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, Skidmark Bob makes a good point that we're all consumers in the society and we're not outside of the society. He thought he was contradicting me when he made that point, but actually that's one of the points that I've been making, is that, you know, as long as we live in the society, we have to work for, we have to work for capitalists, we got to buy from capitalists, and it's exactly what I was saying. And his point about having to go to Safeway because it's cheaper is one that a lot of people can relate to, including myself. And the fact that Safeway is union, Safeway and Albertsons, I mean, union. These are union jobs where people get paid there and get better conditions than a lot of these local grocery stores that Vinny wants to brag about going to. So I think there are some homeless people who've decided politically not to be a consumer, not to be part of anything, and really are kind of saints on the streets that don't want to be part of the system at all, don't want to work for the man, don't want to buy from him or anything. But most of us, that's not a realistic way to live, and we do have to depend on buying from and working for the capitalists. Really, they depend on us, we don't depend on them. And there's where I disagree with Skidmark Bob, is that having to do those things doesn't mean that you have to support the system. You can still be fighting to overthrow that system, and still, you know, you have to do your everyday things of life to survive, you know. So I just wanted to make that point to clarify, because Skidmark Bob, I think, contradicted where I really stood on that.
Okay.
Okay. Fair thanks. Enough. I'll let you get that call.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we're hoping you get a call, but in the meantime, a quick story from another story from Baghdad. Whoops, another call. Let's go to the call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Can I make a quick comment, or are you needing the phone line open?
Go ahead. Make it quick if you can, call, and you're distorting a bit, so speak back from the phone if you can.
Okay. Well, I just think it would be interesting to hear from people that work at some of these local markets, like Staff of Life or New Leaf. I know people personally who work at both of those stores, and I'm not saying there aren't people that work there that have complaints, but I know people that work there that feel very well taken care of, and I know New Leaf does a profit sharing. I know quite a few people who work for both of those stores, New Leaf and Staff, and Safeway, if you are going to shop there, then you should put major pressure on them. Certainly don't shop there now because of the strike, but if you are shopping there, people should put major pressure on them to provide organic food and buy locally grown. But the thing is that large corporations are not going to buy locally grown stuff, and really that's why people should shop locally. They should shop at the farmers market, where you're buying directly from the farmers, or from local stores, because, you know, it's so much better for the environment and for our future than buying some of this mass-produced garbage that's genetically engineered or that's using pesticides and other things that are really bad for the environment and bad for our own health, bad for the workers that are working out in the fields picking that stuff. It's not an easy subject, but there's a lot more to it than what I've heard. So
okay.
I just wanted to add my comments. Thank
sure.
you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
And who knows? I'm hoping we can get our infamous long-distance caller in, but who knows? Maybe he's still hiding in church or something. Could this be our caller? Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, this is Wiley.
You made it in there, Wiley.
Yeah. Pat,
well, excellent. So introducing you, I've kind of been mentioning you on the air prior to your showing up here. You are is it fair to say, pastor of the First Baptist Church?
First Southern Baptist Church of Buena Park.
And we actually had a caller asking, and I'm not going to ask you to get into this at any length, about how can someone who favors, is a right-to-life person, favor Why don't they also favor the right to, I don't know, be free of being, the right for soldiers to be alive and not get further involved in Iraq? And I didn't know what your position on either of these was.
It would be pretty hard pressed for me, time wise and otherwise, to tell you sort of where I stand in Iraq. I do believe, I'm a patriot. I'm a Vietnam War veteran. I had mixed emotions over that war. I have mixed emotions over the Iraqi thing, but I don't see it as inconsistent at all as being against killing babies, and also being supportive of our existing government, even though it has many problems. I'm facing some of the problems in our government right now.
Let's quickly move from so you do support Führer Bush, as I would call him, on this issue.
Well, in to some degree.
All right, that's three bad marks for you, Drake. But moving on to your good side here, you've been fighting for the rights of homeless people against, should we say, a police and city bureaucracy that continues to be unsympathetic.
Yes, very much so, to the point that I had a fellow that came on board with me to help. And when I say came on board, we don't have any staff or any money to pay people. It's strictly volunteer. But he is a paralegal by trade. He is also handicapped, and came on board with a desire, even though he would agree with me in basic theology and philosophical approach. He also believes that the system, i.e. the legal system, is indeed taking undue advantage of the homeless people, and he has learned and become a paralegal and has indeed helped many of the homeless people. And the typical routine is they just try to get them to plead to something lesser, and they still end up getting them to plead guilty and so forth. So he has helped us with that. He came on board. He helped us with several cases with the homeless people. Free paralegal service, not practicing law, but helping them help themselves. And as a result of that, he was also involved in a situation for a couple of years now with a supposed landlord. The landlord was allowing him, it was a barter situation, it wasn't a rental thing. He did free legal service for this man. It had nothing to do with homelessness, it was business. But they came into, they had a problem and a departure of the ways, and he tried to pay rent, and the guy said, "No, I want you out." And Mike said, "I can't leave yet. I don't have another place." And anyway, it's been a battle in court, and that battle culminated actually on the day when you were down here visiting with me. While I was sitting there in the restaurant with you, Mike called me and said, "Pastor, get over here. This landlord has attacked me." And so I went over there, and sure enough, he had attacked him. He had him down, according to witnesses, Mike on the bottom. And Mike told me that the guy was choking him, and he felt like he was about to pass out. And he took his small pocket knife and stabbed this guy in the shoulder and in the stomach area. Mike ended up with a minor wound to the stomach. They said it was a bite. We don't really know what happened. But instead of the city of Buena Park looking at this strictly from, okay, let's do our job as police, let's arrest both of them and let the courts ferret it out, they took this other gentleman to the hospital and took Mike to the hospital. They released the other man because he said that, Mike attacked him, which is, not the truth. They neglected to mention to the DA that there's been some more than a dozen incident reports filed by Mike Matthews in reference to this gentleman's threats verbally and literally. They didn't mention any of that, and so the DA pressed charges. They have Mike in jail on attempted murder, $1 million bail.
Well, it's interesting. I guess this follows the last couple years. You've had tickets for jaywalking, invasions of the church. How would you summarize the last couple years in your experience with the police department?
Well, again, as I have said many, many times, a great deal of the police here in Buena Park are good people, i.e., they bring homeless people to us for us to help. But there's a handful, probably about 10 policemen in this police department, starting with the chief himself, who are jackbooted thugs. And they have decided the way to get this problem, quote, homelessness, out of town is to lean on them, make it tough. They've said verbally, we've had homeless people that have told us that they've said, all you got to do is get out of town. If you don't leave town, we're going to continue to harass you with jaywalking tickets, with no camping tickets, with et cetera, et cetera. And so we fought that fight, and we're still fighting that battle, and this was an opportunity they saw. A neighbor said that when the police arrived on the scene of this fight, they're in an upscale neighborhood. This wasn't a homeless downtown. This was in an upscale neighborhood. $250,000, $300,000-plus homes, upscale neighborhood. The police showed up. When the cop's foot hit the ground, the first thing he said when he saw Mike Matthews is, oh, this is one of Wiley's guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went downhill from there. Mike's been in jail since the 14th. He's very ill with his handicap things. He's blacked out several times in jail. We've written faxes and emails and letters and tried to get the DA to do further investigation, and they've sort of ignored us.
What's he being charged with?
He's charged with attempted murder.
And what's his antagonist charged with?
Nothing.
Nothing.
He wasn't even arrested.
And who was wielding the knife?
Well, Mike wielded the knife. Mike Matthews stabbed the guy to get him off of him. Mike said the guy was pushing on his throat. He said, I couldn't yell for help. There was a report. We haven't found out for certain yet the details, but there was a report that there was a neighbor trying to pull this guy off of Mike, and he couldn't get him off. And so Mike said, I couldn't get him off, and he stabbed him to get him off.
The guy, these two people didn't know each other, or
no? That it's been a long-going problem.
Right.
The guy, the other gentleman's name is Constantin Stanilla, S-T-A-N-I-L-A. Mr. Stanilla owns a large home there in an upscale neighborhood, and rents out rooms to people—not homeless people, but people that are poor.
And what's his beef with Mike?
Well, his beef with Mike is Mike was living in his home in a small room on a barter situation until the man was charged with spousal abuse. And was charged with spousal abuse, Mike went to him and said, hey, I want to just pay your rent. I can't work for you any longer. It's against my conscience to work for someone who would beat your wife. And the guy said, you don't have any choice. You will work for me. And he said, no, I won't. And then the guy went to court to try to get Mike out. Well, Mike knows the law. There was not a rental agreement, so he couldn't use the standard 3-day to quit and all those kind of things. And so every time Mike has won in court against this guy, and all along, though, he said, I will pay you rent. Here's the rent. And the guy refused the rent. But it's been an ongoing court battle. The guy has slammed Mike against the wall, pushed him down, poured sugar in his gas tank.
How do we know that?
Well, because Mike has reported that much of it to me, but there have been 12 or more reports in the Buena Park Police Department where they reported that he went there and there was a threat, a verbal threat or a physical threat, but no charges filed. And even the police officer admitted they had had a lot of calls to that home, domestic dispute and otherwise.
What's the situation for homeless people this winter in Buena Park, which, by the way, for those listening, that's a sort of a suburb of Los Angeles, very close to Disneyland, right?
Yeah, and we're also very close to Knott's Berry Farm. We're in what's referred to as the E-Zone, so the city does not want to admit that homeless people are even here, let alone allow them to stay if they are.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you face a lot of flack 7 or 8 years ago for housing homeless people in your church, and you've been continuing to do so, and then you face some further harassment of people coming and going from your church. How's it going now?
Well, it's going pretty well now. We have probably 100 people here now. We have continued to help people, even though I was convicted of 4 criminal misdemeanors and given 3 years probation back in 97. I've since served that probation time, and we're continuing to help people. And in fact, the matter is, we're continuing to get more and more referrals from the parole departments, from the social services department. And yet, Buena Park still does not want to allow us to stay here. That handful, the majority of the police, the average cop on the beat, says, my goodness, what would happen if they were to close down? You know, we'd be inundated.
Is this winter any worse than the one before, or has there been any impact from the 9/11 police hysteria?
Well, I think we have had, we've certainly had colder weather this year, so we've had a few more people than we would normally, obviously. But we've also had a great deal of, we used to have, I would put it in the phrase, we used to have homeless people that were fighters, and if we went to court with them and for them and helped them, they would stand and fight. But now they're beat down, and they're fearful of fighting because if you go to the police blotter in Buena Park, now what used to be considered normal, just altercations, they put the word terrorist somewhere in their report, possible terrorist. And the homeless people know that, and they know they're afraid, and so most of them are not willing to fight anymore.
But surely with your Republican Party connections, you can contact George in the White House and have him deal with this problem.
First of all, I'm not that naive, and second of all, unfortunately, even though I do agree with some of the things that are going on in the White House, I'm totally disagreeing with a lot that is going on, and especially this Patriot Act is atrocious, and we are indeed on the premises, I believe, of some very serious problems, with this Patriot Act and with this, using terrorism tactics, using the terrorist situation to deal with normal police situations.
But most of the Republicans in Congress don't share your opinion, right?
Well, you're probably right. I'm somewhat of a rebel. This, to me, I just turned 60 years of age, and to give you a little bit of, sort of background on me, I grew up in the South, and I remember in the South, I didn't know any better at the time. I thought white people were better than black people because that's what I was taught. And so as the black people would come into town and begin to demand their rights, i.e., we are human beings as well, we demand our legal rights, and the law enforcement would try to overcome that. And the way they overcame it was with a vagrancy enactment in most small cities. If you were a vagrant, they could kick you out of town. They would say it doesn't matter what color you are. If you're a vagrant, that is, if you do not have enough money to exist and you're a vagrant, we can kick you out on vagrant laws. Well, the same thing is happening now. Homeless people were beginning to stand. Wiley Drakes and Robert Norris's and others were beginning to stand with people and bring some legal as well as press light on the scene. And some of the homeless people were beginning to win. We've won a lot of cases here in Buena Park. But lo and behold, now the police...